I think it's normal with companies. You start solving problems, you know, and that was our case. And it's all about being curious. And I always say that most successful entrepreneurs, one of the qualities they all have is curiosity.
All that and more in this episode of the Commerce Tomorrow podcast.
Welcome to the Commerce Tomorrow podcast. Your one stop to learn about the technology that's powering the future of commerce. Here are your hosts, Dirk and Kelly.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Commerce Tomorrow podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Dirk.
Hi, everybody.
And today we are joined by the co-founders of Bold Commerce, Yvonne and Jay. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We like to get started by asking our guests a little bit about their backgrounds. So maybe, Jay, if you want to start and give us some background on how you got to Bold Commerce.
Sure. Well, without going back too far into the past, I've been in e-commerce since 1998, but then fast forward 14 years, myself, Ivan, and two others, Ivan's brother and Steph, got together, and it was originally to kind of scratch an itch that we had with existing e-commerce stores and to build some solutions for that. And, you know, fast forward today, it's turned into we're almost 400 people. We'll probably cross it next week. And in all over America, US, Canada, we've multiple offices and multiple platforms. But really, it's been, you know, even though we've evolved quite a bit as a company since day one, it's still about solving challenging e-commerce problems. It's just the size of the problems have maybe gotten bigger over the years.
Yeah, I mean, and just to add to that, so I have a developer background, and I'm always fascinated by our founder story, because we got four founders, and we're so different. We bring with something completely different. Jay's got, you know, he actually had e-commerce stores when we started, and you know, me and Eric, we were actually developers, and we were all entrepreneurs. We were all, you know, innovating and building stuff, and I think it's just how we came together and had a complement of wanting to build a great company. And yeah, it's fascinating just thinking back how kind of our story intertwines and everything. But anyways, won't go too deep into that.
It was fate.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, right? So a lot of people in our industry actually experienced a problem in their previous career or role around e-commerce, and then started to build a solution that solves that, right? So I no matter if it was late 90s, the first wave of enterprise platforms, or Toby with Shopify just trying to fix his own problem, and also for us it was similar, right? So it's interesting to hear that everybody is going a similar kind of path and figures something out that is not working well, and then builds a company and product around it. So let's talk a little bit about Bold Commerce, right? So you just said how you got together and started it, but what is the overall founding story of Bold Commerce? What is the vision? Where's the company now?
Yeah, so I mean,
why don't you take that?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, the founding story, we got together to build products to make more money on our e-commerce store. I mean, that's really the thesis of Bold. You know, it's evolved over the years of what it's become. But, you know, over the years, we started building up, we had built 36 different products. What I love about Bold is the culture of innovation within our company. So we've actually built 36 different products over the years. We've started five side companies or sub companies. You know, one of them still going strong, Kickbooster. Kickbooster.com, and it's a crowdfunding affiliate program, launching a pledge manager right away. Anyways, we're doing a lot of really cool things in crowdfunding, but Bold itself really came up with that thesis, where it was just like, how do we help entrepreneurs, merchants make more money? And with all those products that we built, we realized that we were focused in one area. And when you take all of our products that are active today, they really round out what we're calling the transaction experience. So we've got a bunch of products around pricing, you know, subscriptions. We do a lot around the subscription. We have this very powerful checkout that you can plug and play third-party plugins or customize, or you know, you can do a lot with the checkout rollout BOPIS pretty quickly as well. So you know, that's the journey we've been on. Obviously a lot of details between that, but yeah, I'd say we're now in a space where really focused on the transaction experience and trying to elevate that category.
And on the, so to emphasize this a little bit, right? And I know we spoke about that before this podcast, right? So some years ago, right? I think you would have seen mostly as the app company, right? So providing sophisticated apps for commerce, and then this evolved. But can you elaborate a little bit on this one?
Yeah, you want me to? So, you know, like, I think the thing was, when I think it's normal with companies, you start solving problems, you know, and that was our case. And it's all about being curious. And I always say that most successful entrepreneurs, one of the qualities they all have is curiosity. And you're curious about things you are doing. And so we were, you know, the platforms we were working with, we were curious about making things better. And every single app we built came out of a kind of a hypothesis and a question: could we make this better? Could we improve this? Could we help, you know, originally it was, could we help us sell more at the solution? And then, you know, it's, could we help the thousands of stores using it? But yeah, it, you know, for a lot of reasons, we evolved past that. And one is, it became a nightmare to manage. I think at one point we had, I think Van said 35 or 36 apps, and it wasn't, we kind of, you know, like when someone says, what do you do? And you say, well, we have a whole bunch of different apps. It was, I kind of cringed every time I said that a little bit. Like, they all did quite well. And in, from the outside, you might be appear to be successful, but it was kind of like, we were just building a lot of small tools where, now today, I think there's a very cohesive story that we can tell. And it's been a natural evolution. I don't take anything away from anyone. I think every company goes, I mean, you guys went through this at Commerce Tools over the years, your evolution. You learn as you go, and you get a clearer vision of the problem and your why and what you're trying to solve. And so, yeah, like Suivan said, it's kind of come down to that as our core, that the everything that revolves around the transaction experience.
Maybe what I would just add to that is, and you see it with all these great companies. Yeah, I don't know if we could call ourselves great yet. We still have a lot to prove, but
we will talk about.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. What I love to see, you love to see it with all these other great companies that are just doing great things. It's not about, you know, solving, you know, one problem. It's about pushing. It's almost pushing the boundaries. It's like, how do you make commerce just better for everyone? And that's, you know, how do you really just make it a seamless experience where the consumer, you know, doesn't have to fight with the experience, and it's a unified experience. It doesn't matter which touch point or which channel. And really that's how we think about it. It's just, it's how do we just improve everything? Right. And, you know, in the end, you know, one thing that we pride on is our relationships with our customers, our brands and our merchants. You know, it's all about how do we help them be successful, but, at the core, it's how do you help them be successful with their customers? And when I think about innovation and moving forward, it's, you know, how do we just make commerce so much better? And there's just so much opportunity. And that's why it gets exciting to talk about, because you just see the evolution of what's happening and just the opportunity that's opening up in front of us. It's great. It's great to see. It's great to see all the other companies kind of pitching in too and doing some really cool things. So exciting time to be in the commerce space for sure.
I had a discussion with someone, a friend of mine who's in the industry, and I mentioned that we were interviewing you for the podcast, and he said, wait, aren't those guys your competitors? And I said, no. As we had this discussion, you know, earlier on, can you talk a little bit about how you layer on top of commerce platforms and, you know, your relationship with them? Because we very much see you as partners.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and that's how we think of it too. It's like we're really focused in one area of the commerce experience. And the thing is, you know, one person, one company is not going to solve every commerce problem out there. And I think once you realize that and you acknowledge that, you're going to need help, you're going to need partners and other companies to fulfill specific functionality to make sure that a brand is successful. And I think that's the acknowledgement that we have as partners. It's, you know, we're focused 100% on the transaction experience. We're really trying to elevate that experience and solve some complex problems that are happening there. And so, you know, if we talk about the Harry Rosen brand that's on Commerce Tools, we really helped them with some checkout issues that they were trying to solve. And it was, you know, with Commerce Tools, you can do a lot, and it, you know, there's customizations for what they needed and speed to market. Bold was just a fit. And on top of that, they want to layer in subscriptions. So, and that's really where, you know, the complement comes in, is we do offer some functionality that you can't always find on the platform. And we just try and solve those problems for those merchants. So, that's really where we focus is again, subscriptions, checkout and pricing. So,
Go ahead.
I think it's kind of a 1 + 1 = 3 scenario, and it's not, you know, the way to look at it. It's funny that that person asked you that question, because we've got similar questions with other people that we view as partners as well too, and I think having the mindset that you can do all and you build walls just really actually closes in things. And we actually see a world where it becomes more and more towards, like, you know, what we would call like a curated tech stack for their e-commerce build. And it's modular, it's headless, and it's going to be the roadmap for enterprise is becoming more open, I would say, than anything. So we're a piece of that, and we make it better with other partners.
Yeah, I fully agree. I had been on a panel last week remotely, and there we also discussed that the whole, let's say, real estate map that companies are building now for that digital commerce platform will get fragmented, and every room or every function in there, if it's experience, if it's commerce, if it's product, if it's checkout, if it's payment, and so on, there is an own service or an company behind that provides a best of breed product here. And then you need this curated approach, like for Harry Rosen, as you took that example, where then they put together the components and solutions that is best for their business. And by the way, Ian Rosen is doing an amazing job there. He's one of the very few, I would say, brands that is talking that much about technology, about the future of digital experiences, customer touch points, and so on. So it's impressive to see how they are growing and building their business.
Absolutely.
On the company, right? So you already mentioned it. I think you undervalued that in some kind of way, as you are doing awesome. I think one testament to that is the 27 million Series B that you just recently closed. So congrats on that. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the funding, and also give some insights on your company right now. So what is the size, employees? Facts that you can share, sure, with the audience.
I mean, it's interesting. You guys have gone through this process too. I mean, our story started as a bootstrap company. I think this is a little bit because we come from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and middle of Canada. But we never raised. We never even thought of that as an option, to be honest. But when we first started, we want to build a great company, and we pretty much did it with every dollar we made. We put right back into the company. When we raised, I'm so happy we had that background, that 7 years of actual bootstrapping and understanding kind of what that means. But the thought behind raising, it really comes down to, for us, one thing is there's this massive opportunity in front of us with commerce, and we see plenty of opportunity for growth. And that's really what drove that. It wasn't out of need, out of necessity, because of where our company was. It was actually, there's just this massive opportunity, and we want to make sure that we can capitalize on it. So that's really the decision criteria for that process. So fortunate we were in that position, and you know, we've been able to kind of survive that way. But it's interesting seeing how every other company kind of deals with raising, and it almost makes it part of your kind of the DNA of the company, because it's something that you just have to do. So it's not to say it's wrong. It's different. We've got a very different approach, but yeah, that's how we thought about raising. For size, I mean, we're now 400 employees. You know, the last couple of years we've been growing at about 50%. So yeah, it's been kind of this great crazy road that we've been on. So excited to be here at this stage, and you know, it's amazing to be able to reflect and see kind of the path and all the different roads we took. And like I said, we've built five sub brands, right? Like we've done a lot of things that I would have never thought we would have been able to even share as stories. So it's been a crazy great ride. So
by the way, I have a lot of respect for you for only raising $27 million. I know money is really cheap, and I'm sure you could have gotten, you know, many hundreds of millions of dollars. But I appreciate that you're growing slow and steady and, you know, rejecting all of that free money that's floating around out there. I think that whole Silicon Valley mindset of, you know, get as big as quickly as possible, and, you know, almost this casino culture is kind of bad for building long-term sustainable companies.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. That's what we're trying to do, right? I mean, we're thinking long-term, but yeah, hopefully capture some of the opportunity here in front of us with COVID and everything else going on. So.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. So some of the crazy sizes of some recent raises, for sure.
Yeah, and just because you can does not mean you should when it comes to fundraising.
100%. We can have a different episode on this one. I'm actually preparing a LinkedIn article talking about the current excess on SaaS multiples when you raise at a 50x, 60x, and where this could lead to. But we probably should think about another episode just on that topic.
It's true. So we talked a little bit about this already, but you know, imagine 10 years out from now, right? Which feels like an eternity, but you know, 10 years out from now, how does the commerce platform market look like? Do you think we'll still have Shopify and BigCommerce, you know, or equivalents at the low end of the market, and then the upper end will just fragment into smaller, more specialized vendors? Or, you know, how do you think this is going to look?
Yeah, I'll speak to this, and then Ivan, you probably have some thoughts on it as well too. I think honestly, both are going to do really well. I think, you know, platforms are going to continue to exist. I think they're going to continue to grow. I think, especially with everything happening with local brands now, everyone trying to get online, we might even see the BigCommerces and Shopify's of the world double or triple in the next 5-10 years. You know, I actually don't even think that would be a stretch. Like if things just become digital and you need e-commerce store to enable curbside, like a basic form of curbside pickup, it's not unrealistic. And we're seeing everyone kind of flock to it, right? Like the Squarespaces and Weeblies and Wixes of the world. But I think at the same time, so I think there's another thing happening. I think this new model of a headless build, I think is actually ripe for the next, you know, you guys kind of coined that term headless. What was it, 2013-ish? I can't remember what it was, but now I think it's actually becoming a very feasible and generally better way to build a store that future proofs. You know, it's not for the smaller ones, but it's for the enterprise that have big moving parts. And so I think both are going to be doing well. I think this, you know, we kind of refer to it as modular commerce. Some people, it's composable commerce. I think that is going to become much more common for enterprise brands. I think you guys can probably speak to that better than anyone. And as far as where does Bold fit on that? You know, we want to focus on doing a few things really well and extend those platforms and be part of the tech stacks for these enterprise brands. We don't have any ambition to own everything. We want to do our pieces really well.
Yeah.
I have one question, one thought. Jay, on the SMB and mid-market, as you just said. So when BigCommerce, Shopify, and so on have the potential to triple or even more, I fully agree with especially the whole direct-to-consumer trend and everything moving to online. Just a thought there or a question. I don't know what's your opinion on that is. Will a Shopify, BigCommerce, or somebody else then become something like a WeChat also for North America and Europe? Because with tens of thousands of brands out there, how do you navigate as a customer through all the offerings? Or would it make sense to aggregate it, not in a marketplace like Amazon that managed from them, but in a marketplace that's more equal, let's say, where everybody has access to everything, but through one touch point?
Well, I think this is like the million-dollar question that is circling in the air that everyone, to be honest, like Shopify has become more and more a consumer-facing brand over the years as far as merchant. Like when you buy on a Shopify store as a customer, you usually know you're buying from that store is hosted on Shopify. Like you're probably paying through Shopify payments. You're tracking it through the Shop app. You might be getting it delivered through the Shopify fulfillment network. It's not that your relationship is just with the store. And Shopify has always made it very clear. Like the easy thing, and honestly, when I'm shopping, it's a pet peeve. I rather shop from individual stores than, you know, I try not to buy Amazon products, but I do both. But it is hard to shop all the individual Shopify stores because, yeah, you're right. Product discovery is the biggest challenge. And so you would think that a marketplace where you could search all Shopify stores would be the easiest thing. They actually did that in, I think, Ivan, what was it, like 2013 or so?
I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, it was around there.
And then they quickly shut it down because all the brands kind of fought back saying, hey, this, I don't want my products right beside another brand's products. Otherwise, it's just a marketplace. I might as well sell on, you know, Amazon or Etsy.
Not good for the brand, but maybe interesting for the customer.
Yeah, I think Shopify's approach will be, and this is what it is now, and I think it'll continue to be this, is they will leverage their platform and the fact that there's millions of stores on it to the brand's benefit as much as they can without degrading their ability and creating a situation where their stores are competing against each other in a marketplace environment. So whether that means getting better rates through Shopify payments, recommending products through the Shop app, I actually think they're probably like, we can't speak for what Shopify is going to do, but I think there is a lot more runway for them to help stores find products without becoming a marketplace. Who knows? You're absolutely right though. That is the challenge that biggest these brands face is product discoverability.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think?
Sorry, I was just going to add to the kind of the future question because I mean, I think it goes even deeper, and I think all-in-one platforms they will. I mean, especially for the SMB space. I mean, no SMB customer wants to have to manage all the different pieces of a platform, right? So, you know, I think that's where they will continue to be important. When you talk about enterprise and I mean, you guys are talking about already with the Mock Alliance, composable commerce, all that stuff. I mean, what we're starting to see is the deconstruction of all-in-one platforms and have it service-based. So you can pick the best, and I think Jay said it, curated tech stack, right? Like it's, I think that's where we're going. I think headless makes it completely flexible. I wouldn't be surprised if in 10 years you start seeing kind of low code at that point where you can have complete flexibility, but it's very easy to plug and play. But you know, these large brands have complex systems. And so, you know, the all-in-one, it's difficult with an all-in-one platform. It's to make everybody fit in that. And I think we're starting to see it now where, you know, there's these really interesting kind of technologies popping up. And when you put them together, you start building this really powerful e-commerce experience. So.
Yeah. Do you see Shopify Plus ever gaining a lot of traction out there? I mean, they've never really taken enterprise that seriously. They do have, you know, the Plus solution, which is, I think, a step in that direction. But, you know, Toby has stated pretty publicly that, you know, they don't really want to do enterprise. Do you think they'll ever do it and make that pivot?
Yeah.
Or not even a pivot, more like add a real platform for enterprise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we can't really speak on behalf of Shopify. I mean, who knows what they're planning? I mean, they've done some really great things in the past. So I can't guess exactly what's going to happen. I will say that they know, based on what I've seen over the last 9 years, is they know who their customers are. They know what they're trying to solve. And they've been really, really good at staying focused at solving problems for who they are targeting. I would say large enterprise hasn't been their target, but that doesn't mean that their technology can't solve for larger brands. And so you're seeing that there are some large brands on Shopify that are successful, that are doing really great on that platform. So far, I mean, I wouldn't say it's been their focus to really expand past that. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I can't guess that. I think for now, what we're trying to do is we're trying to solve a portion of that. I mean, we grew up on Shopify. I would say we've always taken an approach of trying to elevate every platform we've worked on. And we find gaps, and that's what we try and do. That's how we've made money, is we've found opportunity on platforms and tried to elevate the experience and fill those holes. So will they make an effort into it? I don't know. I could tell you that's been our effort in the last few years, last 3 years. That's really been our focus, has been large enterprise. And I guess we'll see what Shopify does, but I could tell you Bold Commerce is focused on that right now. So
I figured you guys had a Canadian e-commerce mafia or something and have super secret conversations as Canadians.
No, unfortunately. I
think Shopify is probably one of, if not the best, direct-to-consumer platform. And we definitely saw the pandemic kind of reinforce what Shopify's strengths are. And, they did a full court press doing everything they could, trying to help the SMB market and like the local, and help, like they launched, the buy online, like a basic pickup in store feature. And, they kind of, Toby's famous quote was delete all plans and shift. And so, it's hard to say. I think it would definitely be like, I kind of think they need to focus on, like, they're really, really good at D2C. Like that's what they've become. It seems like they're kind of winning in that space. So I, for them, hope they continue to focus there, because I think that's what they're doing well. And I think you can't do everything from the bottom all the way to the top. So.
Yeah. Question about competition. So, you're very focused on the core checkout transaction, things like that. We started to see some payment providers get into this space a little bit, and they have the funding and the market behind them to encroach into your space, right? And I wouldn't be surprised to see more of these one page checkout options from some of the payment vendors. Do you see them as serious competitors in that space?
I think we're going to see competitors from every space, but specifically around the transaction experience. I'm sure they're trying to figure out ways where they can convert and make money. I mean, but I think that's the difference. And that's the difference, the key differentiator that we see is Bold. We've always seen ourselves as the handshake, right? When I always explain to internally, when we talk about Bold, we're really trying to be the handshake between the consumer and the brand. We want to build that relationship and enable the brand to convert whenever that consumer is interested. So let's, have an experience through website, through blogs, through voice, whatever. We want to give them the tools so that they convert and make money. Whereas the transaction or the payment gateways, their approach is really, they just want to make the transaction. And that's it. So there's more to commerce than that. I think it's, the part that they're missing is building the relationship. That doesn't mean they can't get into the space and figure that out. But right now, I don't think they get that yet. That'd be my only thing. But it's not, what's to stop them to figure that out? I mean, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of competitors and from different space. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with banking? As there's a lot of companies around banking and how to really, all we're doing is we're transferring funds from one hand to another. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of things popping up. I think it'll be exciting too. I think there's going to be tons of opportunity that'll open up with these competitors. So we'll see where it goes.
And if we speak a little bit more broadly, right? So when we look at the public cloud, so GCP, AWS, Azure, right? So they all try to step more into retail, right? So in try to offer services over there, try to provide some APIs, often focused a little bit around some machine learning and other functionality. Do you think that they will ever go to offer commerce, no matter if it's more checkout transaction focused or commerce itself? Where do you think that the big platforms out there would stop?
Well, I mean, you have to imagine they will at some point. It seems if you fast forward 10 years, I think that everything on the web is going to have an aspect of commerce. So then these big public clouds need to have that as some tooling for it. I think of Internet of Things, and that definitely seems like something that would drive that. I feel like you guys would probably have the best view on this of anyone. I'm actually curious to hear what you guys would think.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are leading the charge here.
Well, we also asked that, of course, ourselves. Where does this one go, right? We saw them not on the cloud space, but if you look at Amazon, right, they had these A stores and other things where they also said they go into the e-commerce business itself and offer technology to launch. So something like Shopify, but from Amazon and so on. And I think for branding reasons and some others, it did not work out well. I think currently they are a little bit more reluctant or in a waiting position, saying, okay, we want to be the underlying infrastructure, but not sure yet how far we should go up on the stack, right? So this is my feeling on that. So they also think that it's logical, but not sure how far they should go and how much they should compete with the others. And then I think time will tell, right? So from my perspective, if I would be them, it would make sense because they already have a lot of APIs, but are weak on that kind of level. But it really depends if they want to focus more on the platform as a service and infrastructure level or go up closer to software as a service
APIs. Yeah, I don't think we're far from it, right? I mean, you guys, I think with commerce tools, you know, even the concept of headless and composable, I mean, they're probably just watching and waiting to see, you know, once there's enough, you know, brand, understanding of, you know, paying for commerce through APIs and pricing by API. And once that becomes more normal, I mean, I could totally see that becoming the way it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So complete different kind of question. Talking about cultures. As a Canadian-based company, do you see differences between Canadian and US development cultures and also business climates, if any?
So, on top of us being a Canadian company, I mean, we're out of Winnipeg. Not the biggest tech scene in Winnipeg. So it's, you know, when we looked at Austin or just in the state, we looked in North America for kind of a second office when we were recruiting we found Austin we found Mike, who's our CRO, and he's out of Austin. And what's interesting, like I would almost make a claim that, you know, everybody from Austin's Canadian. I mean, it's pretty similar. I mean, I would say we all kind of, you know, we're all human, right? So in the basics of it, it's, we all want to be successful. We all, you know, want to build something amazing, and we all believe in, or we're very passionate about what we do. So, I mean, that's all the same. But I think more of a public facing, out to the public, you know, the fact that we have an Austin office all of a sudden gives us a little bit more clout, you know, that we notice, like, you know, we're not just a Winnipeg office anymore. We're an Austin office, and all of a sudden, okay, you know, you guys know what you're talking about kind of thing. So, you know, that's the biggest thing I've seen from having kind of the US office versus Canadian. I would say the people are all very much the same, very genuine, you know, great people. So, But we also, you know, we also get to leverage a lot of the great tech scene that happens in Austin. And the beautiful, you know, the beautiful thing about our company is we've got a lot of passionate people that just want to get better and want to learn. And now we're starting to see that mentorship and, you know, teams collaborating cross border and they're able to learn off each other. And yeah, we're really seeing the positives of it. We're very, you know, very happy with the decision to open up an office in Austin.
It's been an interesting, like where we are from is there isn't a massive investment community like, you know, there is in Silicon Valley. So when we started, we didn't raise money for 7 years and it wasn't even really a thought to raise money. It was just to build the company, become profitable and grow at the speed that we could afford. And, you know, that could we have grown faster? Yes, like probably, but I'm proud of the way we did it and I wouldn't have changed it. So when we did our first raise 2 years ago, so that was 7 years in, and you know, that was really to put fuel on the fire. Canada's very much a country of, you know, when you start a business, you leverage tax credits, funding grants, loans, a lot of stuff from the government, you know, and employee hiring credits. You often don't think right off the bat, I got to go out and raise a couple million bucks to start this company. And so there's pros and cons to that. Obviously you're a little bit more tied to what you're doing. You can't pivot really quick and change your business model because you're reporting to the government, the project you're working on, and you have to give quarterly updates on it, where you're a little bit more free depending on who your investor is. So I think us being in Canada and now we have a good sized counterpart in the US, I think has actually been a really good mix. So it's been interesting. I don't know.
I agree. I think that's a good balance to strike there. And I've always been a fan of Canadian business climate. And I mean, everybody thinks a little bit more long term. It's very much like Germans as well. You know, building longer term sustainable businesses versus that. I think it's a pretty corrosive culture in Silicon Valley of, you know, how big can we get, how quickly, you know. And I think Germany and Canada, I see, you know, a lot of similarities there in long term thinking and growth and building real businesses. You know.
Yeah, there was an article that kind of made its rounds on Twitter about a month ago. I don't know if you guys saw it, and I can't remember the exact title, but it was something kind of like why the next $1 trillion company won't be built in Canada. And the thesis was that Canada, with its structure, creates more stable, smaller companies, but there's kind of like this glass ceiling where in California, what they've got going is, yes, you have crazy valuations, but what you get is a lot more swings at the bat, and you get the one or two, you know, the Googles and the Apples and the ones that hit it out. And I don't know how much I buy into that, but there is that perception. I think the border is just becoming more and more blurred, though, to be honest.
I would.
Like this last round of investment, I like don't even think we met them. Maybe Ivan, you did, but like we didn't even like shake their hand. It was all done virtually. Yeah. Like, what does the border even matter? Did you even shake their hand?
No, we didn't. We didn't travel at all. Yeah,
yeah. Because of COVID, we actually raised $27 million, and we weren't even in the same room as them. So it's changing.
Yeah, maybe not talk too much about the grants. I mean, I don't know if Jay, you remember this, but we actually stopped applying for grants because it was taking up too much time. I also account for our growth, the fact that we ignored grants for the first couple of years when we couldn't manage. Like, it takes so much money to manage that, right? Or so much resource to manage that. And I think part of, I mean, we got to rethink our grant system here, because when you're a startup, you don't have time to be reporting back to the government. But anyways, not to turn this into.
Well, a grant. I just remember thinking we were going to hire someone full time just to manage the grant application process.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's still a better system than we've got. Maybe you folks can annex Wisconsin and I'll join Canada. All right. Well, we're at the end of our episode. Where can our listeners follow you to learn more about what you're up to?
Yeah, I think the best place is really just boldcommerce.com. You know, we're on Twitter at bold_commerce. But from boldcommerce.com is kind of our launching pad where you can find everything we do, all the products. Yeah, I'll just say there, because from there you can kind of get everywhere.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks again for joining us, and very much enjoyed the discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.